It's 6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
3 members of Doctors Without Borders killed in Central African Republic. Egypt's former army chief calls for unprecedented voter turnout in next month's election. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. The medical charity group Doctors Without Borders, known as MSF, acknowledged Sunday 3 of its workers were killed in an attack Saturday by gunmen in the northwest town of Nangabogila in Central African Republic. Reuters quotes a former parliamentarian as saying gunmen from the mainly Muslim Salika rebel group stormed a health clinic in the town during a meeting of tribal chiefs. It said 15 of the tribal chiefs were also killed. Meanwhile, heavily armed peacekeepers escorted some of the last remaining Muslims out of the CAR capital Bangui Sunday, trucking out more than 1,300 people who for months have been trapped by Christian militants. The chief of the International Organization for Migration, Giuseppe Libretti, says Muslims in PK5 neighborhood hope to stay on as the IOM launches programs aimed at bringing Christians and Muslims together.
For the PK5, the central mosque, the plan is not to leave. We are working on social cohesion. There are other projects to keep them here, like the Cash for Work project, like other dialogue that will start. I'm not sure that they want to leave. Actually, they told us that they prefer to stay in Bangui. The condition is the security.
The latest exodus further partitions the country, a process that has been underway since January, when a Muslim rebel government gave up power nearly a year after overthrowing President Francois Bozizé. UN aid agencies are ramping up efforts in humanitarian assistance in CAR as the rainy season begins, Lisa Schlein reports.
The Organization for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs reports confrontations between armed troops and direct attacks on villages over the past week in the central part of the country have caused more than 5,000 people to flee their homes and seek shelter in religious sites. OCHA spokesman Jens Laerke says access to these areas is limited.
One area where access has actually improved slightly is in Boda, where we've been able to provide additional relief for 24,000 vulnerable people. There's been food distribution, medical, nutrition, non-food items, and wash support. Has been provided.
Despite the security risks, the World Food Programme says it has managed to distribute food to more than 140,000 people this month. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
South African Sunday marked 20 years of post-apartheid democracy in the country. Observances were held in Pretoria, where President Jacob Zuma spoke.
We're free at last. We gained equal citizenship in the land of our birth. Soon thereafter, a new constitution came into being after hard work by South Africans represented by various parties. We gained the rights to life, equality, freedom of movement, freedom of speech, and freedom of association.
The celebration came ahead of the country's May 7 election, which the ruling ANC party is expected to win handily. It was also the first Freedom Day celebration since the death in December of anti-apartheid leader and the first post-apartheid president Nelson Mandela. Former Egyptian Army Chief Abdel Fattah el-Sisi on Sunday called for a big turnout in his country's elections scheduled May 26 and 27 in an effort to counter a boycott plan by allies of former Islamist President Mohamed Morsi, ousted by the military last year. Mr. Sisi called on Egyptians to vote in unprecedented numbers in a ballot he's widely expected to win over the lone other presidential candidate, Hamdine Zebahi, who polled third in the 2012 election. The son of the late Libyan dictator Muammar Gaddafi, Saif al-Islam Gaddafi, appeared by video conference Sunday for a trial in Tripoli. He is currently being held by a militia in the town of Zintan. He, along with the former spy chief, Abdullah al-Sanusi, is among 37 defendants facing a variety of charges linked to the killing of protesters during the 2011 uprising that led to his father's ouster. Algerian opposition parties are expected to boycott today's inaugural ceremonies for President Abdelaziz Bouteflika. Turnout for the April 17 ballot, just over 50%. That's down about 25% from the 2009 ballot. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News. Many of the stories you've heard can be found on the internet at voanews.com.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, April 28th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Peace talks between South Sudan's government and rebels resume today, and the government hopes for a better outcome.
The four former suspects of the coup attempt were actually released on the stay of the case are not going to be one of the preconditions the rebels would want to put forward before the negotiation.
Atene Wek Atene is the spokesman for South Sudan President Salva Kiir. Mali's government announces plans to resume peace talks with separatist rebels. Was he sacked or not? A Liberian-American judge in the U.S. state of Georgia will explain his status. And more disunity in Zimbabwe's opposition MDC as the leader Morgan Tsvangirai is suspended.
I am saying this in order to demonstrate to you that the meeting was beyond all reasonable doubt a bogus meeting.
Douglas Wanzura is spokesman for the MDC faction of former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai. There is soon to be a new tool to fight animal poaching in Kenya. And Pope Francis canonizes two former popes. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. South Sudan's government says it expects a significant improvement in peace negotiations with rebels following the release of four political detainees accused of plotting to overthrow President Salva Kiir's government. This as the next round of talks are expected to begin today, Monday, in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. Presidential spokesman Atene Wek Atene tells reporter Peter Clotty the administration is hopeful that the release of the political detainees will serve as a goodwill measure to help find a solution to the country's crisis.
A significant result is to be expected, to be anticipated in the resumption of the peace talks on Monday, simply because the four former suspects of the coup attempt were actually released on the stay of the case are not going to be one of the preconditions the rebels would want to put forward before the negotiation. So I believe there will be some change in the manner in which the rebels would want to negotiate peace with government.
Does the government expect the released detainees to be part of the negotiations?
In fact, we have actually set time and again, and the president was on record by saying it is either those who are actually released now, they are actually free to join either side, either to cast their lot with the rebels or to come to the government side. And the government is of opinion of allowing the third party to be part of the peace negotiations, simply because we wanted the peace negotiation to be confined to the two warring parties so that they can stop the bleeding.
There are concerns that the released four are not being given the opportunity to go out of the country, for example, to Kenya, because their passports are being withheld. What's the rationale behind this?
I just heard it called by one media agency that one of the four detainees tried yesterday to go to Ethiopia, but he was returned because his passport was impounded by the security. The truth of the matter is that the president has given these people to be free and go anywhere they wanted in the world, only that the president has urged them to be inside the country, simply because, you know, our political problem can be solved within South Sudan. This idea of our politician trying to bring in the third party in an attempt to, you know, allow those countries to meddle into our affairs is not helpful to South Sudan. So the president urged the four to remain inside the country so that they could build the trust with the public, because the public were outraged by their release. So they have to be here in South Sudan at least for some time.
You said the public expressed outrage after these four were released?
Yes, because the public says last time the seven were released on bail and given to Kenya, and now the four are released. Who is going to be accountable for the life that are lost as a result of the coup attempt on the 15th of December 2013? So the people are asking these questions, but the president has talked yesterday to the people, to the nation here in South Sudan at 4 o'clock yesterday, and has urged the public to accept this as a government gesture of goodwill to give peace a chance. The people now are actually understanding the situation.
Attorney Wek Attorney is South Sudan's presidential spokesman. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Juba. The government of Mali has unveiled a plan to revive stalled peace talks between the government and armed separatist groups. Announcing the plan on Sunday, National Reconciliation Minister Zahabi Usidi Mohamed reportedly said he has been instructed by the president to resume negotiations aimed at making peace between what he calls the Sons of Mali. Hamadoun Touré was Minister of Communication in Mali's former transitional government. Speaking as an ordinary citizen, Touré tells me that the territorial integrity of Mali remains non-negotiable in any peace talks.
As you know, I'm not a government official, but I think it's a good move to revive the talks and show who is ready to talk and who is ready to take up arms to find a solution to the crisis in the north part of Mali. The government needs encouragement and assistance from the international community as well as from neighboring countries to make a breakthrough in this dialogue with the MNLA rebellion.
You mentioned the MNLA. These people want a separate Malian state. So do you think they might want to come back to the negotiating table?
Well, maybe the question should be put to them. What we know is any negotiation should take into account the territorial integrity of the Malian state. We won't have dialogue on separatism. We don't have dialogue on independence. We don't have dialogue on autonomy. We want them to be part of a nation. If, of course, they are ready to that, I'm sure the government will accommodate them and find a room to peaceful talks and durable solution to the crisis.
So the National Reconciliation Minister says that he's going to make a tour. He's going to go to Algiers. He's going to tour the region. Why is he going to go there?
I told you we need help from neighboring countries, as we need help from international community. I'm sure he's going to make clear Malian position as a Minister of Reconciliation and to tell them the plan, the program, and the readiness of Malian authorities to revive talks, but also to tell them the territorial integrity is non-negotiable.
One would think that he's going to Algeria because maybe some of these rebel groups may be based in the neighboring countries.
Based or not, we need assistance from all neighboring countries. As you might know, we have a long frontier with Algeria, we have a long frontier with Mauritania, and we have a structure called the Council for the Heads of Armies of the three countries working together along with Niger to try and stop these jihadist Islamist groups from entering the country. Also to try and prevent this drug trafficking and also trying to fight this separatism.
The first talks, if these talks get underway, they probably will be in Algeria. Algeria must be very important, must be playing a very important role here.
Yeah, I told you about the common border we are sharing with Algeria and our historical relations with Algeria even before their independence in 1962. So we are very, very close to Algeria. We are also close to all neighboring countries. We need their assistance. You can't do peace alone. You need peace with your enemies, but also you need peace along with your neighboring countries.
Hamadoun Touré was Minister of Communication in Mali's former transitional government. He was speaking with me from the capital, Bamako. In Zimbabwe, the MDC faction, aligned to former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai, on Sunday dismissed as clandestine a bogus weekend meeting which suspended Mr. Tsvangirai and other top party leaders. As Arthur Chigoriwa of VOA Zimbabwe program reports from Harare, Tsvangirai supporters say the meeting was held in breach of the party's constitution.
Addressing a press conference at the party's headquarters, FDCT spokesperson Douglas Monzora said Tsvangirai remains the legitimate leader of the party. Monzora, who was accompanied by party organizing secretary Nelson Chamisa, blamed the ZANU-PF, central intelligence officers, and the smaller formation of the MDC led by Professor Weshman Ngwe for the problems besetting his party. Monzora said there was no quorum at the Mandeo Training Center meeting where a faction led by MDCT Secretary General Tendai Biti suspended Tsvangirai, his deputy Tokozani Kupe, national chairman Love Momoyo, Chamisa, and Monzora himself.
I am saying this in order to demonstrate to you that the meeting was beyond all reasonable doubt a bogus meeting. Out of 13 members of the standing committee, they were only two who were present and invited. Out of the 54 members of the national executive, only 8 members were invited and did attend. Now, you can see, ladies and gentlemen, that the composition of the National Council, or the so-called National Council, was below the expected minimum, which is two-thirds.
Monzora said, in essence, by their move yesterday, BT and all the other MDC activists and the members involved, they formed their own party, adding they just have to find a name for the new formation. He said the party is worried that BT, a lawyer by profession, was leading efforts to breach the party's constitution or in the name of trying to get rid of Tsvangirai.
The long and short of what happened yesterday is that Honorable BT has formed his own political party. It is a political party for which they are failing to find a name.
Monzora says BT is being investigated for allegedly confiscating party property together with the suspended deputy treasurer, Elton Mangoma, as they previously were custodians of Labour-backed movement's assets. He said the Tsvangirai faction is in control of the party's harvest house headquarters, adding they will soon ride to parliament, recalling all lawmakers who have gone with BT and seek new election to replace them. Monzora blamed ZANU-PF party, President Robert Mugabe, and the Central Intelligence Organization for destabilizing his party. Reporting from Harare, this is Arthur Achigoriwa.
It is Monday morning, April 28th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 16 and a half minutes past the hour. Liberian-American Judge Melvin Johnson in the city of Lithonia, Georgia, says he was not fired from his judgeship, contrary to news reports. Instead, Johnson says he made a conscious choice to spend time fighting against corruption in Liberia. Johnson is one of two Liberian-Americans indicted by the Liberian government last year for economic sabotage and wanted for extradition from the United States after making secret recordings of Liberian government officials. An Atlanta-based internet publication on Common Ground reported that Johnson was terminated after learning that he was not certified to be a judge because he repeatedly failed to complete the annual training for judges as required by state law. But Johnson tells me the article contained false information and that the author has promised to retract it.
I read the On Common Ground article, and the article wasn't truthful in a lot of ways. I tried contacting the author of the article, a colleague, a lawyer of mine, friend, that also represents me in Liberia, contacted the author of the article. That author admitted that there were things on there that were false. The author apologized and promised to retract the article. And that is the article, that's the source that has been used by Front Page Africa, I believe, to write their article. So they're writing from an article that either has now been retracted as we speak or is going to be retracted.
So you decided to leave your position as a judge?
Essentially, I did. Essentially, I made a conscious effort to focus on basically some other areas of interest, other areas of passion. I had served for 7 years, and I took on a cause in Liberia that consumed my time, and I no longer was able to spend the requisite time there in Lithonia.
The paper reports that you repeatedly failed to complete the annual training for judges, but you have already said that the paper is trying to retract the article. Is that correct?
Yeah, the paper claimed, I think, that since 2009 that the required annual training had not been done. There are people in the judiciary that their job is to make sure these trainings are done annually. And anybody that has any experience with the systems here in the U.S. can attest that whether you are a nurse or a doctor or a mechanic, anybody that's certified in any way, no governmental body will allow you to go 5 years when you're required to annually renew your license. If that was true, I wouldn't be the one getting in trouble. Those that work for the state that would have allowed it to go 5 years would have been the one getting in trouble.
You know, Judge, you became, famous or infamous, depending on who you are talking to, because you made secret recordings. You and Ms. Cochran made secret recordings of Liberian government officials. So when you say you want to spend your time, how do you want to spend your time? Are you going to further pursue their process of fighting corruption?
Well, absolutely. This will allow me to do more of that. Now, of course, currently we're engaging this cause in Liberia to bring liberation to our people, to bring some equality, to bring a halt to the corruption, more specifically to the Ellen Johnson Sirleaf government and the corruption clique that has been described by her own government officials.
Melvin Johnson is a Liberian-American judge in the U.S. state of Georgia. He was speaking with me from Lithonia, Georgia. The old Pajeta Conservancy in Kenya is about to have a new tool to fight poaching, a surveillance drone. The animal sanctuary, which is home to poaching targets, elephants and rhinos, is working with American manufacturer Airwear to design a drone specifically made to deter wildlife poachers. Richard Vine, chief executive officer for the conservancy, tells Ricky Shryak that the demand from East Asia for rhino horns and ivory has increased poaching throughout Africa in recent years. He hopes the drone will help fight this trend once it has launched in June.
It's been through another development phase. We don't know whether that development phase is going to have taken it to the point that we can use it operationally or not. We hope that it will, in which case we'll put it into action as quickly as we can.
How will this drone work to fight poaching?
This is but one element in the fight against poaching. It's not going to be a silver bullet. The way we combat poaching is a variety of different ways, using different methods in a joined up, or hopefully a joined up sort of a way. So it depends upon good intelligence. It depends upon good community relationships. It depends upon an armed deterrent with high quality people operational on the ground. Exactly how we use it, we're not quite sure until such time as it's here and we're able to experiment with it, but it will be used probably primarily as a deterrent. If we know that there is a notorious poacher living in a house somewhere, there would be nothing to stop us flying the drone at night over his house to basically tell him that we know he's there.
Even if his house isn't on the conservancy?
Yeah, within limits, obviously. Probably more importantly, what it will be is just another tool in our armory to create a perception amongst those who wish to poach rhinos and or elephants that we have this at our disposal.
It's a surveillance drone, correct?
Absolutely, it's surveillance. And then it basically flies itself using an autopilot system, and it's equipped with very powerful cameras, including an infrared camera, which can operate to see things, or at least hot bodies, such as humans, at night.
Why was it seen that this kind of a step needed to be taken? Has poaching increased in recent years?
Let's talk about Africa as a whole. Poaching for rhinos and elephants across Africa has become much more serious over the past 3, possibly 4 years.
That was Richard Vine, chief executive officer for the Old Pajeta Conservancy. He was speaking to Ricky Shryak from Kenya. Pope John Paul II and John the 23rd were canonized in a ceremony at the Vatican that was a first for the Roman Catholic Church in more than one way. VOA religion correspondent Jerome Sokolowski reports on how people in John Paul's native Poland followed the ceremony in Rome.
Not only was it the first time two popes were made saints together, but also the first time Mass was celebrated by a reigning pontiff and his retired predecessor. Benedict sat with the cardinals, and Francis offered the awaited proclamation.
Beatus Ioannem Vicesimum Tertium.
We declare and define Blessed John the 23rd and John Paul II be saints, and we enroll them among the saints, decreeing that they are to be venerated as such by the whole church.
The ceremony was telecast to churches around Poland, where John Paul is both a religious figure and a political hero for his fight against communism.
This is the shrine of the Pope known in Poland as Jan Paweł II, who's now their 31st Catholic saint. And many of his most devoted followers came here to watch the ceremony.
The event also attracted non-Poles. Pauline Hamilton flew in from Northern Ireland to be where John Paul spent much of his life before becoming Pope.
You know, this is his home. You know, this is where you feel him most real.
Masses of thanksgiving were offered after the ceremony, and people lined up to kiss one of John Paul's corporal relics. In central Krakow, a warm-up for an evening concert was underway, and the cafes around the square did not lack for business. Arek Maciocha says John Paul is a legend to all Poles.
Myślę, że ja jestem jednym z pokoleń.
I am the person from the generation which was covered with papacy of John Paul II, and he had really big influence on me, on myself, on people of all people of my age.
But Gosia Mazurkiewicz worries that memories of the Pope are beginning to fade.
This celebration is so important to give us a chance to remind it one more time.
John Paul was canonized just 9 years after his death, and the hope is that what he did for Poland and for the Church will be remembered by generations to come. Jerome Sokolowski, VOA News, Krakow, Poland.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Monday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we focus on the University Sports South Africa Athletics Championships in the capital, Tshwane. University of Free State student Wade Van Niekerk clocked a lifetime best of 20.21 seconds in 200 meters to set a championship record on Saturday. He earlier on won the 400 meters. Van Niekerk, who has run 44.92 seconds in the 400 meters this year, reckons he's drawing nearer to achieving his childhood dream.
Tshwane is what I love, so I took in what you said as motivation to work my heart every day on the 200 and show SA that this is where I want to be. Yeah.
Well, both records are now near your age. I don't want to put you under pressure. Do you feel you can run faster sometime this year in both 2 and 4?
Since childhood, when I started running, the SA record what I wanted. So it's definitely a goal for me. When it comes, it comes. I'll truly appreciate it. I'm working hard towards it. It's where I want to be.
That was Wade Van Niekerk, the South Africa University Athletics 400-meter and 200-meter champion, speaking in Tshwane, South Africa. Meanwhile, the University of Stellenbosch's Justine Palframan improved her lifetime best to 23.02 seconds in the women's 200 meters. Palframan attributes her success to runner-up and 100-meter champion Melissa Hewitt of the University of the Northwest, who also ran a personal best of 23.19 seconds.
I'm extremely happy and couldn't ask for anything more. Now I just want to get under 23.
Yes. How did you find the race? Because it was quite competitive with Melissa on your outside, and you know that she has a good start at the...
Yeah, well, because she has a good start, it helps me because I know I have to be even quicker. And, well, it's actually nice to have her there because it made me push the whole way and I didn't give up. Yeah.
That was Justine Palframan, the South Africa University Athletics Championship record holder in women's 400 meters and 200 meters. Earlier on, the University of Pretoria's Rikkonette Steenkamp won the women's 100-meter hurdles in a championship record of 13.23 seconds. She has set new targets for the year after earlier on running a lifetime best of 13.17 seconds. Other notable performers included Botswana's three-time Africa high jump champion Kabelo Hosimang, who cleared the bar at 2.21 meters. African Championships shot put silver medalist Orazio Cremona, who prevailed with a heave of 20.40 meters. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a great day. Here's our listener mail for this Monday morning, April 28th.
I wish to congratulate Pope Francis for canonizing Pope John Paul II and Pope John Paul XXIII. May Pope John Paul II and Pope John Paul XXIII pray for Nigeria to come out from this present insurgency ravaging the country. Congratulations, Pope Francis, for the job well done in the Catholic. Comrade Mazi Patrick Kuro Crawford, Owo Blue Premises, Atani Arachukwu in Abia State, Nigeria.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. And that's it for this Monday, April 28th edition of Daybreak Africa. I'm James Barty, Washington, saying have a lovely day, Africa.
Are you wandering around lost in a musical desert? Well, follow your ears to the fantastic, the one and only African music mix on the Voice of America.
VOA.
Bathe yourself in this musical oasis. From the north to the south and from the east to the west, the African music mix plays only the best.
Abibae.
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 Why don't go to Ayamidomo? Tune in from 0 to 300 hours UTC and from 11 to 1300 hours UTC every single day on The Voice of America.